Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
My next guest is an actor, a playwright, and a very proud Donegal man. He's a famous surname in the county. Politics, social justice are in the blood. Ulton Pringle. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Oliver. Thank you very much for having me.
You're from Killybeg specifically. You have to get particular when it comes to Donegal. It's a continent, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I was just in Rathmullen yesterday up in Donegal, and I was thinking it's an hour and a half away from me in Killybegs. It's a world away. I'd be halfway to Dublin.
You know nothing about that part of the world.
No, nothing at all. It was
foreign territory.
New experience, yeah.
And what was it like growing up? You're in a normal part of Killybegs?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. I really loved Donegal. I actually moved back there recently and think maybe I'm reliving my childhood maybe.
But I
loved it. I loved the sense of community about Donegal, and I love knowing everyone. And I feel there's something about it, Oliver, where it feels a bit like the air is a bit lighter. Not to get a bit woo-woo on it.
I'll get woo-woo if you want.
Whenever I'm in Donegal, I feel like the days are less claustrophobic or something. Okay. And kind of you feel a bit more relaxed and there's more space in your day. Whereas in Dublin, I feel like, you know, the rat race I should be running.
It's a bit urgent.
Yeah, yeah.
So you feel bad if you're not rushing around, whereas in Donegal, you're still getting stuff done.
Or even in Donegal, you know, you can nip down the town and have a chat with like three or four random strangers, whereas in Dublin, like, you're stuck on Dublin bus for an hour.
That would never happen. And no one talks on the bus.
They'd look at you weird. Like, even when I first moved to Dublin when I was 18, I was really surprised that, like, I'd be having chit-chat with shopkeepers and they were looking at you weird. Or people were looking at you a bit strange all the time, and I felt like...
I love how you kept the Donegal traditions going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was unstoppable force.
Yeah.
Is that why Donegal people ultimately have to return? To find peace and happiness?
I don't know. I never thought I would return, Oliver. Like, I was surprised that I wanted to move back so much and that I loved it.
You couldn't wait to get out maybe at one point?
Yeah, like when I was 18, I thought that's it. Now I'll never go back. It won't be for me anymore. But then when I was 19, my father took sick.
And your father's well known. Former Donegal TD, Thomas Pringle.
Yeah, yeah. He's enjoying his retirement at the moment.
Growing up as the child of a TD, were people looking at you in the town going, oh, there's the, he'll be fine now. He'll have the seat next.
I hope not. I would never want to be involved in politics. I think there is probably a link between acting and politics, but who knows?
Interesting.
But it was interesting growing up there. I remember teachers would say to me, like, you have to set a good example. Someone like you needs to set the example. And then when dad was elected to the Dáil, things got weird because people started saying, you're going to move out of your house now and get a nice house and you're going to go somewhere better. And so it was kind of strange. Like, you could feel people treating you differently. I was 13 when dad was elected to the Dáil.
Yeah.
So things sort of changed for us overnight, really, when that happened.
And of course, he's not the sort of man who would want to change his house.
No, he is not at all.
Following his politics.
Yeah, no, he's quite a progressive man. I think that's what I love about him, Oliver. Like, he's such a... I think if I could be half the man my father is, I think I'd be doing really well in life. Like, he's a really progressive, moral, generous and decent man. I am biased, but that's
But still, you don't hear sons say that about their fathers.
Yeah, I think I've been really lucky in that regard. Like, I really think about that. Like, to grow up as such a role model for a positive masculinity, not to get woo-woo on it again, but like, he's just such a generous man who really believed in progress for everyone. And it's such a simplistic notion, but as a politician, he just said, my job is to make people's lives better. And if I'm not doing that, I'm failing at my job. And from him, I really believed it. And to have that model for the last 28 years has been really wonderful, I think.
And it was a good model for an independent voice to go and say that.
Yeah.
Sadly, lost his seat in the November 2024,
in 2024
election. But you mentioned that he was sick and that's when you moved back momentarily. From college?
Yeah, he had a stroke in 2017.
Yeah.
And I took a year out of college to go back to be with him and my younger sister. He made a miraculous recovery and doctors were kind of surprised that he went back to the Dáil within 3 months and was back speaking in the Dáil and really made a huge recovery.
Yeah.
But I went back to be there for that year and suddenly I found that I loved Killybegs and I loved the community. I worked in a small little grocery shop in Killybegs and I loved all the regulars and I really felt like it gave me a whole new sense of life, I think.
And where were you in college? What were you doing?
I finished my first year in college, so I was working in a nursing home that summer in Glasnevin when I got the call that dad was sick and I went back to Donegal then.
So you took a year out from the course?
Yeah.
And you've no regrets. This seems to have been a lovely year.
Well, it was a really important year. I think I had to do it because I kept thinking that my dad was such an important person in my life. Who would I be if I didn't go back and be there for him when he needed it? So I have no regrets about it at all. But also it kind of reset me, I think, a bit. Like I went to Trinity College Dublin in Dublin and that was a strange experience. But like I felt like I was on this trajectory and then suddenly to go back to Donegal and realise that I actually loved doing the washing and I loved doing the laundry and I loved working in a grocery shop. It was really important.
Because your dad made the recovery, were you thinking, oh my God, I shouldn't have taken the whole year out?
No, I don't think so. I think it felt important to be there. Like, I think he made a far quicker recovery than we were all expecting. As I said, the doctors thought it was a bit miraculous. So that did change it, where you were kind of there for the last 6 months thinking, oh, well, it's fine. But I'm always glad.
But maybe because the family were around him.
Yeah, and I think...
And the sister.
Maybe. I don't think I have a miraculous touch or anything. I don't think I'm like, you know, a saint or anything in that regard. But it was just to be there and to be present there. I think it's something I'd never regret doing.
What did you learn during that year? Because you were working in the shop.
Yeah.
You had college on pause. This is something I think they do in a lot of countries, where they essentially take a year out and then go back to college.
Yeah.
Did you go back a changed student?
A changed man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I did. Like, I think when I met so many different people working in Kearns, I think it was Londis at the time. I think it's a Cost Cutters now in Killybegs.
Oh, no, like, that's the real battle.
Yeah. You met so many people, and I think you learn so much about different people's lives, and that everyone has their own issues and that everyone's battling their own fight. And I think that was really interesting to learn and to realise.
People would tell you their life stories in the supermarket.
Yeah. I think I have a face for that, Oliver. I think it's the slightly doughy nature of my face.
What aisle in the supermarket is the best place for dropping a life story?
I think it's at the till. It's the tills. I worked the tills and the aisles.
That's why it takes forever.
It was the tills where people would come in and start telling you everything about themselves. And then I think they would feel kind of embarrassed. So the next time they come in, they'd be looking at the floor a little bit because they told you maybe too much about their lives.
That fella, he'll write a book about you, that fella.
Yeah, couldn't do that. Never do that.
And I presume you'd be well known to everyone in Killybegs at this point, because of your dad, because of your award-winning personality.
I'll take that. I think people do definitely know you, and I think I felt so bad for so long that people would know your name and you didn't know theirs because everyone knew dad. I'm trying to get better at that. I'm trying to memorise names as much as I can.
That's the hardest skill in the world.
Yeah, how do politicians do it?
Unless you really want to go into politics.
No, I really don't want to go into politics.
You don't
not
have
at
to
all.
Remember everyone's name. Yeah. Your dad, obviously, hero in your life.
Yeah.
So obviously very easy man to have to come out to.
Oh yeah, no problem at all when I came out to dad. My sister actually came out before me. My sister blind, so there's two of us in the family. Mm-hmm. And so she came out when she was 15 and I was 13. I was like, God, she got there before
me. Very late,
so that's
15.
Yeah, I was like, that's it now. I can't do it now. I can't have...
Really? This was like a setback? Because you have been... You're 13 though.
I knew at 13, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd realized
you weren't planning to come out, were you?
No, but I kind of thought you couldn't have two gay people in the one family. I was like, God, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But the more gay people I meet, Oliver, the more people who tell me they have gay siblings as well.
Yeah.
Must be genetic. But yeah, so when I came out to dad, he turned around and said to me, you know, son, there'll be a day where this doesn't have to happen, that people don't have to come out. And I really look forward to that day. Yeah.
You couldn't get a better reaction.
No, but it's what do you expect of him? Like, he just is such a generous, decent man. Like, he just embodies that in his whole life. He does get angry, and it's a real shock when he gets angry. It's kind of frightening.
It is with those kind of people, isn't it, Dad?
Yeah. Oh, when Dad shouted as a kid, you knew you were in trouble.
You felt bad yourself.
Yeah.
Your sister, how did she do it?
She came out while we were watching Silence of the Lambs, which is my favourite story, Oliver. I remember watching Jodie Foster on the screen.
Appropriately.
Yeah, and Blind came out. Now when I look back, I just thought, lesbian icon Jodie Foster, and then my lesbian icon sister as well. Yeah,
Silence of the Lambs forever. That movie.
Forever. I don't think I've watched it since, but I just remember like Jodie Foster was on the screen as I was reading the letter. Yeah,
she had a letter.
Yeah, she had a letter. Yeah, and I did a letter too when I came out as well. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, a literary family. You know.
Everyone just did the film. Was it pausable? Did everyone just pause and read their letters? I don't know.
I think the letter was passed around.
Go away.
So yeah, I think maybe my mother read it first, and then the movie was paused, and we all had a wee read. Yeah.
What did you say in your letter? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I think I might have apologized. I think.
JJ, right.
And said that I was sorry, but this is who I was. And I think that's when Dad came in and said, you should never apologize.
Uh-huh.
It's not something ever to apologize for. Yeah.
And is your memory kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling of relief?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, like I always knew he was gonna be there, because obviously he was the same when Blahin came out. He was really loving and accepting of her. So I think maybe I felt different because I was the guy. I was the only guy in the family, the only son. You have that kind of masculinity thing of like, you know, it must be such a shame for somebody for their only son to be gay. And then you suddenly realise that's a load of... can I say that word? No, I can't.
But at the time, a load of shite, yeah.
Yeah, I can say shite.
But at the time you're believing that in the run up to it. And
totally.
You're 16, 17?
Yeah, 17, yeah.
17.
Yeah, you're embodying it and you're thinking about it, and you're, especially maybe growing up rurally, Oliver, I was really conscious of not being that gay person. Like I was trying not to show it, but it was so obvious. I mean, anybody with a pair of glasses noticed it. But I was trying not to show it and was thinking like, I'll be different, you know, I won't be flamboyant and I won't look at guys even, yeah.
You were trying to shut down.
Yeah, I even played rugby for a year. I mean, yeah, it was really...
You're a very tall man. Yes, you would have been good at it.
Very tall and very big. And I think that's why they asked me to do it. I was a hooker. I don't really know what that was though. But I know I was a hooker for a year in rugby. Yeah.
So you weren't any. My next question mean any good?
No, it wasn't.
And
good at
did
all.
You enjoy? If there was a year, that's a long time in your.
I don't think I did. Like I just
formative years.
When I think of it now, I just think of being out of breath and trying to keep up with everyone on the pitch. Hard stuff.
Drama was the draw. Very clearly.
Yeah.
And Trinity to study drama, you went right to the top.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I was 13, we came to Dublin to visit the Dáil. Actually, my dad, when he got elected, brought the local school down to the Dáil, and we went into Trinity for a walk around. And somebody said, "People from our school don't go here." And I remember being like, "Well, I'm going to try and go here."
Oh, did you took it as a challenge?
I did. And then I studied drama, so it was the lowest points course in Trinity, so it was fine anyway. So it was easy enough to get in.
Well, to interrupt you there is an interview and a process to get in. It's not that easy to get in.
Yeah, yeah. You have to do an interview, and then you have to do like a workshop as well and stuff, and then they preliminary.
You're playing a thing down that's very difficult.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's the Donegal thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I'm just being humble. but yeah, you do your interview and then you get preliminary accepted. So I knew I was preliminary accepted then. So I kind of stopped studying then because I was like, I'll be fine. Like, I'll get it.
So no wonder you took a year out then. You're relaxed out.
Ah, yeah.
You're easygoing.
Yeah, yeah.
You made quite a splash, haven't you, as a playwright, both as a student and since. Tell us about the play Boyfriends in 2024.
Boyfriends, yeah. It was a romantic comedy I did about two fellas in a situationship. I remember the last time I was on Radio 1 talking about a situationship, and Sean Rocks was like, actually, that's not a new term. There's been situationships for a long time. I thought I was really cracking something.
He knew.
But I was talking about situation. It was a play inspired by the idea of you follow 4 months in the life of these two fellas, and they never say they're boyfriends, but they're sort of sussing it out. There's no limits on their relationship. So kind of we explore everything that could possibly be possible between these two men, and particularly between their bodies, am I allowed to say sex? Or their carnal relations.
Carnal
relations.
That sounds much worse.
Yeah, no, sorry. Their sex lives, their
sex lives, and particularly wanted these differently bodied.
Yes. So I was one of them. Yeah, yes. So I was I don't think fat's a bad word, Oliver. I actually embrace it. So I was the fat guy, and then there was the toned guy, and I kind of explored their relationship and kind of what happened at the interplay between their bodies and where their bodies met. And there was loads of other stuff in it about grief and kind of addiction and loads of other stuff going on. And they had a pug dog, because most gay men have a pug dog, a dog with breathing issues.
I missed that memo myself.
You didn't get that? Oh, well, you'll be looking it up now afterwards, looking for a breeder. So it kind of followed their relation between their bodies, and something I was really interested in
the
piece.
Yeah. And the reaction it got, particularly from women.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting because there was a whole, because it was following their situationship, not to get too much into the form of the play, but anything was possible. So every scene would change form. So they were in a romantic comedy at one point, they were in a sitcom, they were in Bridgerton, they were in a Shakespeare. And then at one point, the whole week was narrated from the calories of intake of the toned character. So it was his My Fitness Pal, and it was his week in calories. And women of a certain age really seemed to be quite affected by it. I remember a woman in Donegal came up to me and she was like, God, I realised that was my life, that I do that all the time as well. I'm just always concerned with what I eat. And another woman said to me, she was counting up the calories in her head before he was saying the totals, and she was able to go like, no, you got that.
Away.
One lady was like, you got that wrong. A rice cake actually has more calories in it. So the internet did me dodgy there. Yeah.
And come here. So the curious thing is that they both have different levels of insecurity. The world sees one as fat, the other as fit. But they actually are both dealing with the body issues.
Completely. And I guess I was interested in not exploring it from my character's point of view, who obviously does. I think when you are bigger, you have it's a constant process, and it's a non-linear process, Oliver, of kind of accepting yourself and feeling great. And then maybe something might knock you back and you get back up on the horse again. But I wasn't so much interested in that as in trying to understand the other character, the fit character, and why he is, I suppose, for lack of a better term, fatphobic, or why he does visit that upon somebody he fancies and somebody he actually wants to be with. I mean, one of the earliest lines he has in the play is he looks at the other character and says, God, I don't even know why I'm here. I wouldn't even look at you twice across the room. Like, you're not my type. And that kind of sets the tone of like this character who's wondering, like, I do fancy him. There's something about him, and we have this great sex life and it's really amazing. But like, he's not somebody I would ever go for. And that's what was really interesting to me and what I wanted to explore in the play.
Particularly because this was almost semi-memoir, wasn't it, for you and your dating experience early on?
Well, I resist the idea that it was semi... I resist the idea that it's autobiographical. There's definitely an emotional truth there. I mean, when I was 18, I got bus errand down to Dublin. There were 30 buses down to Dublin to go on my first ever date with a guy.
All the way from Donegal?
Yeah, yeah, that 4.5 hour bus journey. Yeah.
You must have been brimming with excitement.
I think I was dying inside and hoping I didn't get sick on the bus. but eventually I got there and I met him at the Spire, and we went for a walk and we went to TGI Friday. So it was a classless date. He was 19, I think I was 18. And halfway through the date, he said, I'm really sorry, I have to go to the toilet. And he went to the bathroom, and it took him ages to come back. And when he came back, he sat down and he said, "I'm really sorry. I was just having a panic attack in the bathroom because I don't think you're good looking at all." And I kind of blanched for a minute. He said, "Just looking at you now, I just don't think you're attractive whatsoever." And I said, "Oh, I'm really sorry. Well, will we just keep eating?" So we finished our meal, and then Oliver...
You apologised to him?
I apologised to him, and I paid for the meal afterwards.
Oh, no.
I know.
But you're a kid. You're 18.
I was 18, spending my pocket money. That was my first ever experience of going on a date with a fella. And it kind of... I'm not going to say it set a pattern, but, you know, there's been a tendency to have that brought forth by men quite a lot in the last, you know, 10 years. And I was really interested in that. Like, why do men feel that they should say this? And even some people would be like, "God, I don't know why I find you attractive. Like, it's crazy I could find someone like you."
This would literally be your experience sometimes?
Yeah, yeah, a lot. Like, and a lot of it on the first date. And I was really surprised, Oliver, that they would often ask for a second. And I was like, but they're being horrible. But I wondered, was it something about...
I presume you told them where to go.
I think sometimes I went on the second date to see what they'd say. I think I was a budding writer, you know, I was cataloguing all the madness. I was really surprised that people were being so mad.
So what was going on? These are gay men who have certain ideals.
Yeah, yeah.
But they find you attractive and are now starting to doubt themselves. Is that
and are quite surprised, yeah. And some of them would even, I remember one guy once said to me, "God, you know, like, I've realised recently that beauty's only skin deep, which is why it's so great that I'm here with you." And you're kind of looking at it, is this, I'm like, am I losing my mind?
Aren't they hearing their words out loud to
themselves? Yeah, yeah. And kind of, I think we live in a fatphobic culture, Oliver, and we live in a culture which aestheticizes the body, and bodies are everywhere, and we're all told we have to look a certain way.
So it's worse than ever, isn't
it? Yeah, and especially for men as well, I think, at the moment. But I'm not a men's rights activist, but I do think that something happens with them where they feel they're able to say it or something, and I think I understand the thought. Sorry, what I mean is I understand the thought. Because we live in a fatphobic culture anyway, I can understand why you would think that.
Yeah.
But I don't understand verbalizing the thought to somebody and also not trying to get rid of the thought, not working to decouple themselves.
Why don't they have the trip switch?
Yeah, yeah.
Or ask themselves, why am I judging this person? Like,
yeah, and
it's
that's
amazing.
And that's what inspired the play then. That's where Boyfriends sort of came from.
You got great material, but it must have hurt.
Yeah. I think I felt kind of crazy, Oliver, because I was thinking I would look in the mirror and be like, you know, you're looking all right. Maybe you look a bit like an Irish Adam Sandler, but it's fine, you know, like you're okay. And then you would sit in a date and have that thrown at you and be like, I had this great, I think it's because we were raised wonderfully, but I think I had this belief in myself that no matter...
Comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, and maybe it's because I grew up like a fat gay kid in Donegal as well, so you were getting that thrown at you a lot growing up as well. So you kind of had to develop this sense of self and a strong sense of self of like, I don't really believe that. And of course you have to reckon with it and feel terrible about it, but always I came back to the thing of I don't believe you, and I don't believe that, and I refuse that thought.
That was always the conclusion.
Yeah,
you were lucky because a lot of people have been floored by those things.
Yeah, and maybe I was for a time, but I just know I always thought like, no, actually I think I'm okay, like I think I've got a little something going on, and I refuse that. Yeah,
obviously there's the confidence that they were.
yeah
What did you ever say anything to any of these people? It seems to have happened multiple times.
Not really, no. I always kind of thought to myself, like, I can't believe you said that, and just carried on then. And always I would stop seeing them. Like, I never went anywhere with them anyway.
They became extremely unattractive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it specific, do you think, to the gay scene?
Well, I remember talking to my friend Helen back home. She was my first girlfriend back home in Donegal. We're still friends now. I remember saying it to her, and she was like, you know, I feel like men would know they're not supposed to say that to a woman. Or she kind of made a joke about it, and usually they'd wait 2 years into a relationship to say something horrible like that. Whereas it seemed to me it was on the first date they were saying it.
Yeah. Go away. So it just happens quicker.
Yeah, it seems like kind of there's... I sometimes wonder, are men socialised that, you know, that they can't say that to women, but with gay men, you know, I remember somebody said to me once, the unfortunate thing about gay men is they're both still men and everything that entails.
Gay men are...
Are still men, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you can, you know, you've still been socialised as a man, you still have all the inherent trappings of that as well. Yeah.
There is definitely a kind of a thread though, isn't there, of body ideals, a kind of a fantasy that exists, particularly when you see groups of gay men who go on their holidays together or socialise exclusively together.
Yeah,
it can become quite a vicious little...
Yeah, the shirtless pictures. Yeah. I've seen a lot of shirtless pictures at the minute. Yeah, I guess it can. Like, I suppose it's why somebody asked me recently why there's always a lot of queer characters in my work or LGBT characters in my work. And I just think, like, because it's fascinating. And it's really ripe to be explored and talked about and put on stages and the complexity of it. And I also do think, Oliver, that you know, somebody asked me when we were touring Boyfriends last year, we were supported by the Arts Council tour around Ireland, and somebody said, does it cross boundaries? And I said, what do you mean by that? I knew exactly what he meant. And he was like, you know, do straight people come to see it? And I was like, they do. And you know what? They enjoy it. So I think it's really important that like you can make a play like Boyfriends, which is really specific to a gay male 26, 27 year old experience, and still have it, you know.
It's just relationships.
Yeah.
In the same way that Heated Rivalry has mostly women
it's taken off.
It.
Yeah. Women love it. Yeah.
Come here. That's the Boyfriend sounds amazing. I hope you tour that again.
Hopefully.
But we'll the latest one is Oscuelga.
Yes.
It's from your play. It's been translated.
Yes, my play Piglet has been translated into a play called Mucking, which is running for this from tomorrow to Friday in the Project Arts Centre. So Piglet and Mucking is a kind of crazy play about a young woman who kind of loses her mind in a gender studies class.
Yeah.
And she takes her top off and shows everyone, and then leaves college and ends up working in a fish and chip shop in Offaly. And she becomes obsessed with Jennifer.
She becomes obsessed with who?
With Jennifer Coolidge and revenge. So one day in the fish and chip shop, her two old best friends from college walk in, and she sees them and decides now's her time to get back at them for perceived slights.
Oh,
and it's about bodies, ding ding ding. It's about bodies. Yeah. It's about modern culture. It's about, you know, Snapchat when you're 14, and it's also about revenge and yeah.
What's Jennifer Coolidge from American Pie, and of course White Lotus.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where she very memorably says,
Yeah. And I mean,
these gays, they're trying to murder me. Is that her line?
Oh, yeah, that's in the play. So basically, she's obsessed with Jennifer Coolidge. So whenever she feels threatened in the play, she quotes Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so clever. Who's translated it?
HK and the Hirdon, my colleague HK, has done it. A brilliant translation in Irish. Unfortunately, I don't speak that much Irish. So when I went to the reading, I could understand Scalaga agus Iasc agus Banya and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited for it to open tomorrow.
Scalaga agus Iasc, so fish and chips.
Yeah, the fish and chip shop. Yeah.
And that's running from the 24th. It's running, that's this week.
Yeah, it runs from tomorrow to Friday night. Yeah,
in Project Arts Centre. Are you going to brush up on the Irish now? This the trend that's going. You'll get piles of money.
I kind of want to. I felt really inspired during the Catherine Connolly campaign. I was really, God, I want to speak that. It'll be a lifelong thing, but my dad's actually in his forced retirement. He's gone back to Irish language classes, so maybe I'll father son bonding. We can go to classes.
You're back in Killybegs mostly, are you?
Yeah, I mostly live in Killybegs.
Is it a good place to write? Is that why you're back there?
Yeah, I love it. Like, because you can just sit at the kitchen table all day and there's really nobody else in the house, just Thomas watching quiz shows. So it's grand. Like, yeah, you can really dig in.
I'm sure he's doing a lot more in his retirement from the Dáil.
He's
than flat
out.
Shows. What's he doing?
Oh, like, he's working with a lot of different anti-racism groups around Donegal. He's like now chairperson of the board of the Ashland Centre in Kilcar. So he's working a lot. Him and my grandmother are a pair there. They go out shopping every Saturday to Lidl. I don't join them for Lidl, but I do join them for lunch afterwards. So yeah, he's flat out.
You have an amazing life story behind as well, a family story that one day surely will be a play. Your grandfather.
I wonder, could you make it into a play? I don't know what my spin on it would be yet, but
You'll figure it out.
Yeah, my take, what my
that was is. Peter Pringle, your granddad.
Yeah, he's my granddad, yeah.
He's only dead a few years.
Yeah, he died on New Year's Eve 2022. Mm. He was sick with cancer for a long time, and then eventually he died of it. He was, I think he might have been 84, 83 or 84.
Right.
He was a fascinating man, a complicated man, but a fascinating man
he
as well.
He was wrongly convicted of killing two Gardaí in 1980.
Yeah.
Sentenced to death.
Yeah,
as
he might have been
time.
One of the last people in Ireland sentenced to death.
Before
I think nobody had been executed in Ireland since like 1957.
No.
But yeah,
it was
one
a technical
of the last
kind of thing that would become a life sentence.
I think Charlie Haughey commuted a sentence, maybe.
Was that right? Yeah. But he had 15 years.
15 years in prison, yeah. And then his conviction was overturned in 1995, yeah.
When he died, then, because of the injustice that he faced, he was kind of seen as a saintly figure.
Yeah. And that annoyed me a little bit.
Did it?
Maybe there's something wrong with me, Oliver. But I kind of hate this idea that, you know, in death we become sainted and we become amazing people. I think it denies us our humanity a little bit. And I felt with him, you know, when everyone was talking about him as this wonderful, chivalrous, amazing man, I was thinking, actually, he was way more than that. And in his complexity, he was human. And I think that should be honoured in his legacy as well, I think. And he also wrote a memoir about it, so, you know.
What would you have liked to have been reflected that would have balanced?
Well, I think in the 60s and 70s, he was a real womanizer and an alcoholic. And he left my grandmother to raise four kids on her own in the 70s.
Yeah.
And she heroically did that in the 70s and 80s. And I think, in some ways, and then in prison, he sobered up. He came out of prison and then became like an activist to abolish the death penalty.
Changed man.
Set up a charity and stuff to work with exonerated people. So like a really fascinating man, but it's a complex legacy, and I think that should be honoured, I think.
There surely is a place at funerals for a bit of truth, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's like your theme. No matter what's going on, you want a bit of truth.
I wondered, should I be the one to stand up and do it? But then I was like, no, I'm not gonna do that. I think now I'd probably do it.
You're a young man, yeah.
Now that I'm older and bolder, maybe I'd get up and do it.
There's no lack of boldness. Alton Pringle's play Piglet, translated into Irish now, called Muachin, runs at the Project Arts Centre from tomorrow, the 24th of February, to the 27th. Tickets at theprojectartscentre.ie. Alton Pringle, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Oliver.
You very much, Sloan.
Text 51551. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.